And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, May 11th, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 14. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
I'm Matt.
I'm Dennis.
And welcome to the show. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as on Facebook. You can email us, everyone, at InGameChat.net or find our forums over at ColonyOfGamers.com. Don't forget, if you're on Steam, we've got a Steam group you can join up with over there and play games with us and other listeners. This show is currently being pre-recorded. This will be the next to last time I think we do this.
This will be the last time we do this.
This is the last time. We're live in the studio next week.
That is correct.
Wonderful. I'm really actually happy to hear that. I'm tired of getting up this early. Anyway, we record these in the early morning and then have them for you ready as they play in the evening. So we will be back live in the studio next week, and we'll be in the chat room, we'll be on the webcam, and we'll be taking your calls, and everything else is back to normal, as it were. Jumping into the news, we had a lot of stuff going on this week, just a ton of stuff to get to. We're going to start with the console talk, because we've only really got a few more weeks before we can, you know, discuss these rumors and the speculation and that sort of thing before it all becomes solid fact, and then we have to go on, you know, what we know there. First thing we got was that a internal memo was discovered, found, leaked, whatever you want to call it, from Microsoft, talking about certain functions of the next Xbox being available offline. It did include HDMI cable box functionality when it talked about that. It also included that a Blu-ray would be something you could play without having to be online when it said that. So, sort of a confirmation on these things if the internal memo is to be...
Right, a soft confirmation.
Yes.
But it's not any more concrete than what we'd already heard. We had seen both of those things included in the spec sheets that were leaked ages and ages and ages ago.
But we couldn't go on those because it was... It's a leak, and you're never certain if these things
are
true.
So is this. This
exactly.
This is a leak as well. We're really just playing a ridiculous game of speculation bingo here with these kinds of things. There is no telling exactly... there's no knowing the validity of what any of these things are. You can't know when it's leaked whether it's legitimate or not. Some of the news sources that supply the leak might have a better idea because these guys have informants on the inside, people who leak to them occasionally, people who are trustworthy, you know, provide relatively kind of authentic documents from time to time, but you never really know. So in this case, we're hearing again, I mean, it's speculation that it's going to include a Blu-ray drive, but I don't think that that's a terrible kind of speculation. I think it's just...
It would make sense that it would.
Yes, more that it wouldn't make sense if it didn't.
True.
I can't imagine any other disc format that they would choose to use.
Yeah.
We know that they're not trying to launch their own again. They're not sticking with what they have now. DVDs are ridiculously small for the size of media they're trying to... You know, the size of the games that they're trying to sell.
Yeah, especially when you have... Well, Assassin's Creed 3 coming on two discs, while, you know, I can get a PS3 Blu-ray, which has it all on one.
Exactly.
How many discs was L.A. Noire on the 360, as opposed to the one disc on PS3?
For my playthrough, it was one disc. I didn't get past the one
disc.
That was all
the game it had for you?
Yes, that's exactly right.
But with them trying to be more of the media centric as opposed to the gaming centric.
Right. Well,
this makes sense about the Blu-ray.
That's
with it being offline.
Right. And
with the media stuff.
Whatever it is they intend to do to have this act as an HDMI pass through, set top box media center machine, that
just so happens to play games.
Right. That it's going to be a Blu-ray player is a surprise to no one. That it's going to be some kind of media device is very obvious. The 360 is already a media device. That it's breaking out and trying to be a media control center, a cable box, television, streaming control center, isn't a surprise, but it really changes the tone. It really changes the color of what they're trying to do. It puts the entire system in a different light to me. And for some reason, I'm very suspicious of it. It's not something that I want. And it's actually not something that I can use. I'm a cable cutter. I don't have a cable subscription. I have an internet subscription. I have very good internet connection, but I don't have cable. I don't do that. I don't want to do that.
You don't need to do that.
No, I don't. I need to do it for a few things, and you have to find other mechanisms by which, you know, other ways to get the stuff that you want, legitimate or illegitimate or whatever. Everyone takes a different approach. But for the most part, you can get everything that you want, most of what you want, I guess I should say, without cable. And I just don't like it. I don't like cable subscription models. I don't like the way that traditional television delivers their television. I don't care for it. And I haven't been that guy in a really, really long time. So if Microsoft is offering at any level to help me manage, you know, my Comcast or my Charter, my Nology connection, my cable subscription, well, then that's pointless. That's a pointless. And if you think about the longevity of the system, about how the system is going to last for X number of years, how many people are going to continue to become cable cutters? How many people are going to start thinking more and more about the things that they can get through individual subscription methods or that they can get online? Or how many more people are just going to be satisfied with Netflix and a high-speed internet connection? I don't know. But you can't make, you know, you can't draw any conclusions about it. We don't know what, like, we don't even know exactly what they're doing. We're just all really suspicious because we know Microsoft would rather sell us a media box than a gaming machine.
Yeah,
I think that's absolutely clear from the tone of their voice, from the tone of all of the leaked things, all of the rumored things. And to be fair, they are rumors. Everything that we've heard so far is rumors. They've been very, very tight-lipped about it. They haven't said anything. It's been how long now since since Sony acknowledged the PS4 and gave us some information about it? I mean,
February 18th, I think, something like that. I mean,
right.
It's been three months. Yeah.
And in all of that time, we haven't heard anything more than just some kind of rumor about the next Xbox. Is it still even an Xbox? You know,
yeah,
we don't even know
the name of it.
No, not at all.
I mean, was the code name Durango is the internal name right now.
Right. But Durango's been the internal name for ages and ages. I mean, we're talking about years now. 720 has just been the joke name that everyone in the world has used to talk about the next Xbox. So
seven is larger than four.
Seven is larger than four.
It's so, like, they took the idea of the Xbox Media Center app that was on the original Xbox that people ported, and they just ran with that.
It's like, what's funny is
that's
that
what we want to be.
They didn't run with that for the Xbox.
No.
For a period of time, the Xbox really was just a fantastic gaming machine, but their focus changed entirely. They spent several years and an unknown amount of money inking deals with different publishers and distributors and content creators to have very specific app channels on their box that were all about delivering movies, TV, music, and, okay, I guess we'll give you some games too. I mean, that's entirely unfair, but you understand my point. They haven't been interested in doing deals with indie game developers. They were,
like we said previously, episodes that they've been cutting game developers of their own staff.
Yeah.
You know, Ensemble, Bungie.
Yep.
That's not their focus.
And now they find themselves in the weeds a little bit, where game content creation is concerned. Like, they don't have people to make enough games. They really, really don't. They're stable of people who make video games for them. Not talking about third parties, but for them. The things they control directly really isn't anything compared to what Sony has right now.
What titles are they going to announce on May 21st?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
what
ESPN,
titles?
Netflix.
ESPN, yeah. Netflix. That's exactly right.
I mean, is it going
to
be
What they're going to do. They're going to try to, all right, first things first, you are never getting shed of your however many dollars a year Xbox Live Gold subscription. You're never getting rid of it. That's going nowhere. You must have it. I cannot imagine that they're going to find a way not to still charge you for the right to play, or the privilege, I suppose, of playing with your friends. You're going to have to pay that money to play multiplayer with your friends and to stream your Netflix. I think they're not going to budge on that because they earn a lot of money. They earn an awful lot of money by being able to do that, by being able to say, here's the cover charge. You got to pay for your own Netflix subscription. You got to pay for your own high-speed internet. You had to buy your Xbox.
And
you had to pay for the game that you're playing multiplayer and whatever DLC it demands. But to even come in the door, you got to pay us, you know, what we said last week. What did you correct me?
$60.
So anyway, but that's neither here nor there. We're still in the territory of rumors. And all we really know now is whether this is a direct reaction to the to the other rumor, which is an always online Microsoft machine and Xbox or whatever they're going to call it, or whether this is just some other thing. You know, I mean, we should be fair to them. It is just rumored. The only time it's really peaked out, you know, is when Orth was, you know, running his pie hole on Twitter, which
and that didn't could mean reveal anything.
It could mean anything. It could have been a thing. It could have been nothing. It could have been baiting. It could have been nothing but, you know, mean-spirited or playful banter. It could have been any number of things, but it disappeared.
Yeah.
And he disappeared. And the argument disappeared. And, if you know, we should remind everybody, it's still nothing but rumor that that's what it's going to be. And there's every reason to believe that those rumors, like anything you hear about what the next console will be, you walk into your GameStop or you walk into Best Buy or you hear from a guy who knows a thing because he reads a website, it's all rumor right now. There are very few things that aren't. You know, what isn't rumor? That there is going to be one. That it's going to use AMD hardware. Like, there's very little else beyond that that isn't just guesswork at this point. And it may sound legit, and it may even be like a leaked memo, or you may know a guy who knows a guy who works at Microsoft, but there's no telling how old that is. There's no telling how much work they're doing at this very moment.
Right.
Trying to figure out what the final shape and flavor and look of this whole thing is going to be. They've still got a week and a half to figure out exactly what it's going to be. And
a company that big can do a lot in a week and a half.
They can have several options open to them right now.
Yeah.
And all of those options may be on the table. There's no telling what the name is. You know, the past week has seen a lot of rumors about
Infinity.
Oh, it's definitely Xbox Infinity. 8. Right. That's been, as a name, that's been floating around for a year. And it's another joke name. And its relationship to the 8 is a joke. And the 8 and the infinity symbol to the 720 or all of these different things may be true. They may be not true. I don't know. None of it. And none of that really matters. I personally don't care what it's named.
Well, the only reason we care is so we know what to call it.
Right.
Instead of going which to the is next
a,
Xbox.
Which is a good thing, though, because it's a good thing to bring up. And it was something we were talking about earlier. I don't ever call it the Xbox.
No.
I know that that's their solid piece of branding, but I call it the 360. Like, I have a PS3 and a 360.
Yeah.
That's what I have. I don't have a PS3 and an Xbox.
When you ask somebody, are you playing that on the 360, or you... There you go.
Yeah, they know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, you never say Xbox, because it's like, what, you mean the original one?
Yeah, exactly.
What's going to be the next term, then? I mean, what is... I mean...
If
you
going to
play that on the Infinity?
I like next box.
You would.
What?
You would like something like that.
I do.
Well, then what about the one after that?
The nextest box.
Right? I mean, Sony's got it. Sony has the right approach. Just
number.
The PlayStation is a very, very solid piece of brand. It's a solid recognition. You have a PlayStation.
It's a good easy abbreviation. To abbreviate.
Yeah, it is. And then you just add another number. It's fine. It's simple. At a glance, you know exactly where they're going with it.
They're actually the first one to really do that with just the numbers, because like even Nintendo...
They were the first one to stay around long enough to do that.
Nintendo's been around long enough. I mean, even longer, obviously. But, you know, they go with different naming conventions every single time, whether it's the SNES, the 64, the GameCube, stuff like that. That's one thing I think that Sony has, that they just, all right, let's new number.
Yeah.
And it's
this,
simple.
This is clearly the next iteration of our hardware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not just, well, here's the key.
Well, and you run into that situation with Wii and Wii U now.
Yeah.
There was somebody on one of the COG forums who said, you know, I thought it would be nice to, I'll have to find his exact words on this, but he was talking specifically about the naming convention. And he was all for however it was going to be named until he saw the confusion that came from the Wii U, where it was just too close in its naming convention for
and the
average Joe
exactly
consumer to make some difference.
I mean, it's, what is, if you're just looking at a glance, you're not going to, you may not.
Well, that and plus putting a U in front. Now, if they said the Wii 2, people might have said, oh, this is much better, this is great, this is whatever, but when they put a U in front of it, it didn't necessarily
distinguish itself enough.
No, for common.
It sounds like, it seems a bit like a half measure. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're jumping from one iteration of hardware, like one distinct iteration of hardware from another, even appearing as a half measure. Now,
that would be good for like the Sega CD. You know, that's like a good half measure stuff.
It was a good piece of tech, but it was nonetheless a half measure.
Yeah, and not in a completely new console.
There was a Reddit thread related a little bit to this, and I found this echoed in several different conversations in different places around the internet. In general, I like to believe in a rule of, like, don't ever read the comments because they just make me angry. But comments are full of people, and I do like to see what large groups of people are thinking. And somebody was talking about, why not call it the Xbox 3? Like, why not jump on to the iterative naming scheme? And it was pointed out that, well, no, you can't, because the PlayStation has a 4.
Yeah.
And the Xbox would have a 3. 4 is bigger than 3, so there you go. And there were loads of people who bowed up at that idea and said, well, that's ridiculous. I would love to meet somebody who refuses to buy a system because its number is less than the other one. And what I find interesting is that
the only way they win that war is if their price is less than the PS4.
Right, but that's a problem as well.
Right.
If your price is less and your number is less, I'm not kidding you. Subconsciously, psychologically, it will have an effect on what people at the counter think. If you are a subscriber to a gaming subreddit, if you are a devotee of any particular gaming forum, if you listen to this show, you know, on purpose, then
thanks for adding that touch in there.
Then you probably already know this. Your idea of what is happening is shaped by the fact that you enjoy it. You really like games. You like to know what's happening. You like to feed off of the rumors. You think it's fun to make guesses about what's going to happen. You are, in a way, immune to certain misunderstandings.
But we're not the only market.
I do my very best to remember that, to remember that just a few years ago, and it was not a happy time for me, but a few years ago, taking a break from my profession and winding up, you know, in dire straits, I sat behind a counter at a GameStop.
Most of us have done that. Most of us have done that.
We've all worked in at least retail at some level. Yeah. And you understand that just because you think that all of this information is important, just because you follow all the details of this stuff,
we're not the only ones buying these things.
We're not even half of it. We're not even 10% of it.
Yeah.
The overwhelming, massive majority of people who have ever bought one of these things, who see the commercials, see the videos of the games, hear people talking about it, they mostly don't care to know what the rest of us know. And so they walk up to the counter and they ask a simple question. Well, which one of these is better? What, like, which one of these has the whatever that I want? Which one of these got this game? Which one of these systems is this thing? So wait a minute, like, is this one the new one or is this one the other one? Which is the newest one of the whatever that you have, and like, why should I buy it, and why is this one so much? All stuff that we all take for granted. It's just the rote, memorized basics of, like, what differentiates one console from another. And what we think of it isn't the same thing as what other people think of it. And I'm telling you, if this one's got a 4 and that one's got a 3 and they cost roughly the same, there are going to be a lot of people who just don't even want to look at the one with the 3.
And Microsoft knows this. It's the reason they named it the 360 instead of the 2. Instead of the 2, because PS3 was going to be there. So
yeah, as gamers, you know, we know that PS4 and Xbox 3 are the same generation. But what about the moms? What about the grandparents who are getting this for their kids that they don't know this thing?
The undecided
The undecided voters, that's
right. The non-gamers that just happen to walk in
there. The undecided voter represents about 5% in the world of spending money on entertainment and video games. It represents probably something like 75%.
Yeah,
there's a massive amount of people out there, and these are not the people who are going to buy this console day one. They're not hungry for it.
He's going to be overtime.
They are not going to dork out and flip out, and their inner 12-year-old is not going to do
stand in
handsprings
line
or anything.
They don't have May 21st marked on their calendar.
No, they don't.
Yeah,
they don't. And you know full well that every one of us does.
Yes.
At least in our internal mental calendars, we're all waiting for that moment. And then the next moment beyond that is, you know, the 10th of the following month. And and then the release schedule. And these are all things that matter to us. They don't matter to other people. So it may seem silly about all the details of what a console will be, but it's not arbitrary. They're making... They are playing several different versions of the same chess game behind closed doors, trying to figure out what is going to be the best approach. I am guessing and hoping, actually, that these two companies, Sony and Microsoft, are not taking the same approach. I really want divergence in what they do. Philosophical divergence, you know? Microsoft wants to focus and become a media center thing. Sony, if we take them at their word, seems to be focusing more on the developer experience and the gamer experience. Like, that's going to matter.
And the shared gamer experience.
The shared gamer experience.
Yeah.
It'll make it easier for me when, you know, come time to put money down on the things, you know, to decide between the two.
There's no decision for me. I'm getting both. Yeah. It's going to happen. But, you know, I mean, that's just the way it is on a new console release.
Eventuality, yeah.
I've got to be there in the line at midnight getting my console. The console time rarely ever happens. Game releases at midnight, sure. Dime a dozen pretty much every single year. But the big console releases...
Well, and anymore, when a game releases at midnight, that just means I stay up late and wait for it to unlock on Steam.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, really, that's what it means. Yeah. I don't go to the store for anything anymore. There is a rare console game that I'll do that for, but even then, I'm as likely to order from Amazon or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the console, that is still a piece of... That's like an industrial piece of hardware. That is a big deal. It's an investment of many hundreds of dollars. It's something that you look at and you invest with kind of a lot of hope. You know, you think, you're going to be the guy. You're going to do what I want. I'm going to spend time in front of you having great experiences.
Yeah.
Maybe not being blown away by graphics. That was what I thought at the outset of every previous generation. And I know I'm
nothing's going to be that step from non-3D to 3D FX.
Well, every step is going to be less.
Yeah.
Every step since then has been less. And there isn't anything to offer in this generation. PS1 to PS2 was fantastic. Mm-hmm. PS2 to PS3 and Xbox 360 was great because it sort of forced us to jump into the HD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prior to that, we all had SD TVs, 4x3 aspect ratio tubes. Now we've all got flat screen HD sets because they're a dime a dozen for the most part. You know,
it's almost weird seeing someone that doesn't have one of those.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, what's that, you know, boxy
thing? It's like seeing a black and white TV in the late 80s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
speaking of my really crappy hotel room when I was at the beach.
Did they really? They had
big,
a tube?
Big, fat tube TV, man.
Wow.
Yeah, I was, you know.
That's why you don't go to the beach.
You knew the quality. The room was like,
did you go to, like, the beach in, I don't know.
Yeah, right. Where are you going?
Latvia or something? Right?
Yeah. No.
Did you have to, like, drive down, like, 5 dirt roads, you know, each one curving around and...
No. Look, I'm not a beach guy, but we went to the beach and then it was... Yeah. So, but anyway.
I love how your complaint about going to the beach is that it didn't have all the amenities of home, like wireless internet access and HD television.
Some sort of at least up there. Didn't even need HD.
Because you sure you weren't heading towards the set of Cabin in the Woods 2?
Yeah. Because I know where you could have found that.
At home.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I found it was actually Suave Peanut who said this. Ryan, who's been on our show way back when we did this. He stopped by and was on the show. Somebody made the suggestion of couldn't they just call it Xbox like Apple does iPad? And he said... He said that's something he'd like to see, but then he considered something like the confusion with so many people not knowing the difference between the Wii and the Wii U, and he kind of wonders that. But he's sure Microsoft would be able to market that a lot better than what he's thinking about. But that's the point, is that if you don't differentiate yourself enough, then you're lost, mm-hmm. you know? You become, it's just two 360s taped together. You know,
yeah,
you become that sort of branded, you know, that way. And the PS4 still looks superior to yourself. Also of note is that this E3, for the first time that I can remember on E3s, and you guys go a lot further back paying attention to them than I do. In one day, we're going to get everything, one single day. It used to be Microsoft was on
By everything, you mean the major press conferences from all of the publishing companies and consoles. That usually took, what, 2 days, three?
It usually took 2 days because it would be Microsoft on Sunday and then Sony and Nintendo on Tuesday. Last year, it was Microsoft and Sony on Monday and then Nintendo on Tuesday. This year, there is no Nintendo.
Right.
So you'll get everything beginning at about 9 a.m. that morning. All through the entire day. Microsoft.
What is that? What's the date and day?
The 10th.
And what day is that?
That is a Monday.
Okay.
That is a Monday. So the 10th
of June. I'm not working that day.
9 a.m. will kick off with your Microsoft thing. 1 p.m. will kick off with EA. 3 p.m. hits your Ubisoft. And then I believe it's 6 is your Sony. Mm. So, boom. All in one day. So you'll get a console announcement or at least clarification and more details in the morning. You'll get games announced. Speaking of EA, they're coming up again in our show.
Yep.
They
love being on our show. It's the only reason they do anything they do.
And then you'll get Ubisoft will come in and do whatever they're going to announce, you know, Watch Dogs, I guess.
Somebody please tell me, because we are not this kind of person, you may have guessed. Is this what it feels like to watch, like, the draft?
Yeah.
Like the NFL draft or something? Like this big day where everybody's like, here's our stuff. All of our stuff. Here's all of the stuff that we're going to try to convince you to buy for the foreseeable future. Here's all of our toys, all of our whiz bang, all of our flash, all of our thunder. Here's all the amazement. Here's the hype. Mm-hmm. Like, and here's the promise of, like, what your beloved hobby is going to offer you forever. So it's like, is that what it's like when they...
I guess so. I mean,
yeah.
That sounds like what it is.
We're all drawing a blank on that reference. Like, yeah.
I always labeled it as our Super Bowl, our Christmas, you name it, all in one single week. This time, basically, one single day.
One day.
But yeah, I always labeled it, this is our thing. This is our 4th of July. This is our
And it's not always good.
No, it isn't.
It isn't always good. Sometimes it's incredibly... depressingly lame.
These are both our season finales and our season openers.
Yeah.
You know, in one single day. So yeah, it's something to look forward to. And again, we only have so very little time to really throw out the speculation and really kind of get into the meat of it before we're going to have the solid details. And then we're going to chew on that for a good while as well. So anyway, when we come back, we'll have more of In-Game Chat. And welcome back to In-Game Chat, moving our focus now to, I guess the darling of our show, EA, Electronic Arts. We're going to talk about them.
We're always talking about.
You could probably go back into every single episode we've done since we've been back on the air and find that we mention EA in every single one of them.
Well, they've done enough to have us mention them.
It's like they're a big publisher or something.
Well, they do like to be in the news apparently a lot, but this one is over the... they won. I say they won it,
awarded?
Whoever.
We don't exactly know why or how it happened this way.
Yeah, but Disney has partnered with EA to basically handle all of the games that will come from their Star Wars acquisition. Just Star Wars, I guess, not necessarily
LucasArts. I didn't get
Lucas
the feel of all of their Star Wars. I just thought, like, everything the non-mobile.
Everything that wasn't mobile or social, which... Let's jump back for
the
a minute.
The real Star Wars games.
Let's actually drop back for a moment and remember when... This is several months now. Disney takes ownership of the Lucas...
October.
...franchise. So half a year.
Yeah.
And... That's perfectly fine. Make all the jokes you want to make about the new films. Say anything you want to say. But for the purposes of what we do, the real concern was about, okay, what's happening with LucasArts? What's happening with the gaming and secondary entertainment division, the stuff that where the games and the books and all of those things come
13,
from?
1313, the expanding universe,
right, that
everything.
Got killed. What's happening? Disney has no history whatsoever of being able to handle the development of these kinds of things. Disney itself says straight away, yeah, we got no interest in it. We don't care. We do mobile. We do social. We do tons of that. We don't want to make core games. You know,
I can't think of the last Disney core anything.
It doesn't matter.
It's all been the mobile. It's all been the social stuff.
Right. So cue the anxiety. And then the next major piece of news was that they completely shuttered LucasArts, that they just decided, you know what, as a subdivision, as a division of the company that handles these types of things, we find it unnecessary. And there's a whole lot of belly aching and everybody, you know, takes a critical hit to the nostalgia. And, you know, everybody feels bad. Everybody decides to go around feel bad and belly aching and caterwauling all over the internet because they closed down a studio that hasn't done anything worth anything in years and years and years.
Yeah, let's they say, really have. It's not like they scuttled the entire LucasArts library. You can't get them anymore.
Right. No, they just decided, hey, guess what? It's painfully obvious that LucasArts doesn't make games anymore. Mm. So, and I don't know what the internal strife was, but, you know, even if you just want to adhere strictly to the Star Wars stuff, that's unnecessary. But if you just want to talk about what LucasArts did, most of what was coming out of it was already licensed agreements with other publishers and developers. Other people were making the Star Wars
games. If it's something that they did, it was a misstep.
Yeah, and it just, things had not been handled. It's all nostalgia. It's all on a shelf in your mind in the past.
It's all, yeah, 1998.
Real. Yeah, it's not real. When they killed it, they didn't kill anything real. And they didn't actually kill it. They just killed that house, that subdivision, that idea. They just killed an idea. But the actual things didn't go anywhere.
See,
but they were still in limbo until this past week.
Is LucasArts, I'm wondering, is it still going to continue kind of like how Telltale has been handling the Monkey Island and the Sam & Max and stuff like that? Even though Telltale's the one that made those games, you still have the LucasArts splash screen.
I think Disney was
very
clear.
Are we going to continue with that?
I think Disney was clear.
They're completely gone.
It's gone. Because as I understand it, all the Lego games are gone too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, because those were Traveler's Tales?
Traveler's Tales, yeah. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, all of those are done with as far as from Traveler's Tales, unless, of course, they decide to renew that or give them the thing. But as far as I know, everything's going to EA. As the announcement states, it's a multi-year licensing agreement that will give the game publisher exclusive rights to make titles based on the Star Wars universe.
Right.
So this kills anything from Star Wars universe. This kills anything from Traveler's Tales. I don't know necessarily about your Monkey Island thing.
Well, no, but
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, but one of the things you're talking about is keeping LucasArts around as a publishing name. And I'm telling you, I think they were very clear that they have no interest in LucasArts as a name. It doesn't do them any good. It obfuscates. It makes things unclear. They don't care. They bought... Let's look at Disney's behavior. Well, they bought the rights to make things that people were clearly interested in. Look at their behavior over the past several years, right? They bought Marvel for billions, right?
Yeah.
How much was that?
Several.
They spent about the same amount on Pixar. Mm-hmm. They got something different with each of those purchases. With Pixar, they actually got talent. They got resources. They got someone they'd worked with as a second party, more or less, and said, you know, just come here. Just come here. Come here. Just come inside, and here's your thing, and we're going to take who you are and what you got, and we're going to make movies with you and your stuff. That's perfectly great. With Marvel, they bought something completely different. With Marvel, they bought the rights to a tremendous number of stories so that they didn't have to worry about licensing them out individually. They could buy as much of it as existed at the time, still missing two key components.
Spider-Man and X-Men.
Spider-Man and X-Men. Mm-hmm. Neither of which is likely at all to show back up under the Marvel banner anytime soon. Spider-Man, because Sony just won't let it go.
Nope.
X-Men, because it's actually not doing too bad.
Mm-hmm. Fox has that, yeah.
But setting that aside, they had very specific things in mind when they bought those. And it's the same thing when they bought Lucas. When they bought Lucas, it was more like buying Marvel than buying Pixar. They didn't buy talent. They didn't buy resources to make films. They bought rights to stories and characters.
Yeah.
And so the fact that LucasArts, the fact that a publisher and developer of video games came with it means nothing to them. They have zero interest in doing that themselves, and they made it very clear from the get-go. Mobile, social, that's what we're doing. It's cheap, it's easy, it's quick, it's not complicated. We'll continue to do that. The rest of this, we're going to license it. And they said that
the
minute
get-go.
They picked it all up. So now we know, now the big news, the whole point that we're bringing them back into the whole reason we're running our mouths right now is that EA now has exclusive rights. And there you go. Twist the screw and dial the caterwauling all the way back up to 10. Because instantaneously everybody makes the obvious joke, right? Because EA is nothing but pure evil. That is literally Hitler. And all games are nothing but giant stacks and collections of DLC. And thank you for ruining my childhood. Blah, blah, cliche, blah.
Yeah.
About everything else. But if you want to be fair and honest about what they're doing, A, Disney's proven themselves to be excellent stewards. Excellent in the modern era. Managers of a thing.
Like I said, Marvel, Pixar, Muppets.
Yeah, and it sort of infuriated Lucas. Me that people instantly started imagining that they were just going to completely ruin the Star Wars thing. And
Mickey's
going to
be a new Jedi.
That's exactly what they did with the Marvel properties, right? Yeah. They cast a bunch of Mickey Mouse Club members. Oh, wait, no, they didn't. They did a fantastic job with them. And the Muppets thing I'm not so great about, and its whole... I don't like the way that it was essentially a cross-promotion for ABC shows, but that's neither here nor there. The point is, Marvel, Pixar, and Lucas in particular, all of that stuff, is a much bigger deal than Muppets. It's a much bigger deal than any of that, and it is sold across every form of media. And they know that. They know that it's worth something. They've done the math on it when they picked it up. They've looked at every existing license. They know that it's a big deal. So the question always was, who's going to make the games? There's no way there will be no games. The games industry is worth more money than the movie industry. So it doesn't matter that they're going to make Star Wars movies. It's the licensing. It's the merchandising. It's the franchising and the distributing of all the other things. Books, movies, comics, everything. So who are they going to go with? And everybody was really upset that they went with EA. But I have to ask
who else is bigger?
Who else?
Who else could possibly do it? THQ doesn't exist anymore. Activision, they're way worse in terms of their management of properties than EA is, if we're all going to be honest with ourselves and each other. That would be a much less happy arrangement.
Ubisoft
maybe, but Jeremy had a very good point. I tend to agree with him. I'd like to hear from somebody else out there what they think about all of this. But Ubisoft has a lot of really good properties. They don't quite have the spectrum of developers on their own to really handle. They're not quite big enough. They're not even nearly as big as EA. I think the best choice for all of us who care would have been that Disney distributes each game and each subset of the property, like each type of thing, to a different developer on an a la carte kind of basis. Right.
You get games based on the upcoming films. You get based games on the expanded universe. You get games based on the previous films,
right,
and their universe. You
Which
know,
is very good, doing. Unless you're Disney.
Right.
Why do you want to do that?
No, exactly.
Why do you want to do that when you've got EA? And I don't know who went to whom. I don't know what the relationship is, because there already was a bit of a relationship. But just think about it. Set aside how evil you absolutely believe EA to be. Forget for a moment that you are 100% convinced that EA is going to do nothing but ruin something that you loved. Whatever else you may think, you are going to get Star Wars games.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to get more Star Wars games than you have ever had before. Whether they are what you think you deserve is neither here nor there. You were never going to get those things anyway. You were never going to get another proper Dark Forces game. You were never going to get another X-Wing versus TIE Fighter in any iteration. You now think that it's not possible. It never was possible. It was always impossible, or at least it has been for 15 years. But you are going to get something. And if you're Disney, EA walks up to you and says, look, do you want to do action games? Right? If you look at this subset of the market, look at how people do action games. You want to do Star Wars action games? We got Visceral.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They did Dead Space. So you want to do that? We got a guy who does that. You want to do a multiplayer shooter? Like, those are great, and you can sell tons of expansion and DLC content. We got DICE.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. What about RPGs? Oh, no, you want to do the RPG market? Well, there's tons of that stuff, because look at Mass Effect. Well, yeah, that's ours, because we got BioWare. You want to make a game? Fine.
We got you covered.
You make the mobile, you make the social. But if you want the core gaming, we got you covered. We got everything you could possibly want. what else are you going to do? What other decision was there? If we're honest, this was the only thing that could ever have happened. And if we're even more, I don't want to say honest, but if we're willing to have a little speculation, this might be great. EA does what they do because they have full control over their properties. They don't have to have respect for SimCity because it's their own thing. They can just smash it and stretch it and manipulate it and fold it and cut it up into little pieces and distribute it and then kill it if they want to. Because it's theirs. It's theirs. Nobody can tell them what to do with it.
This is someone else's.
This is someone else's property.
Yep.
And EA's behavior in the past about how they approach DLC, they don't get to do what they want to do. They have sole rights to publish and distribute.
It has to be successful for them if they want to continue with this.
Yeah.
First off, EA's not in the market to make something horrible because, as we talked about in previous episodes, their stock is way down. They need a success. Star Wars will help them with that, but not alone, because they've got to make something worthy, because if it's not, Disney will yank that from them and say, well, you guys, we gave you a chance. This is not good.
We're going to go somewhere else.
And then their stock continues to go down. They've got to come up with their own stuff and don't have a license. I mean, Star Wars is a huge, huge license.
There's so many things you could do with that property.
Huge license to have with that. So, you know, and then maybe that's when Disney says, all right, we're going to do this on an individual basis and start splitting that stuff around or whatever the case. So EA needs this. Disney, not so much.
They do need it. They spent an awful lot on Lucas. And Lucas is more than just Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the valuation of a company like that works. It was a private thing that belonged just to George. So the valuation is going to be a little different. If you look past Star Wars, if you open the cabinet and look at everything that there is to offer, is an enormous amount of stuff. And Disney is not, look, I know they're giant and they're evil, and by the nature of being so big, they do things, they step on little guys. Mm-hmm. I'm not an apologist for giant corporations. I'm just trying to be a realist about why the business is doing what it does, and hoping that the arrangements result in the best possible outcome for everybody. You know, I just want to play good games. I want to play fun games. I'm not necessarily convinced that's what I'm going to get, but the more games I get, the more likely any one of them are to be fun. And Disney spent an enormous amount of money, and you can't just make that back by making films. You have to make other, you have to have a broad portfolio. You got to look at, even if it's just Star Wars, you got to have Star Wars books, you got to have Star Wars comics, you got to have Star Wars the Flamethrower. You got to have you got to have Star Wars games.
Yeah.
And it matters to both of them. It's probably one of the best entertained. It's probably the most open and just viewable symbiotic relationship in entertainment today. And EA is a big deal. They really, really are a big deal. They're a huge company. But Disney's bigger. And it's nice. It's nice that the slightly bigger fish who actually owns the property will be there to give, at minimum, a finger wagging, and at maximum, maybe a swift, serious punishment if EA doesn't behave correctly.
Right.
EA is embattled right now, not just because of their stock performance, not just because Riccitiello resigned and they're in a bit of turmoil, because nobody likes that. No one likes uncertainty. But because of the way they've handled their own properties, because of the way they've been assaulted, in the media, because of how they're viewed as a company, Disney cares about that. They care how they're viewed. They have little interest in allowing EA free rein to run roughshod over their property. They're very careful about how it's viewed at every level and from every angle. So I choose to be optimistic at this point and think EA has the grunt and the money and the developers and the publishing capability to make anything they want, anything in the world, anything Disney will let them. And Disney has the final word. I just hope that this arrangement actually is good, and I can't see any logical argument for it being inherently bad.
I wonder if, since EA is making the games, if Disney will still distribute them through Origin, or if they also allow them to go on Steam.
Well, if they mean what they say, then they said that EA has sole rights to publish and distribute, and that should mean that
Origin only.
It does say EA gets the rights to make the titles, and they will be the only publisher publishing new Star Wars titles for a core gaming audience, spanning all interactive platforms and the most popular game genres. If they are a publisher, that means you can buy it for the console of your choice, for the most part. But if you want to play it on your PC, it's going through Origin.
There is nothing. I mean, unless there is some proviso in this agreement where Disney says, like, you know, we're like Bob Disney or whoever it is now is like, yeah, but I really like Steam, so put it on Steam. No, that's not going to happen. Yeah. It doesn't matter. They don't care. It won't matter anyway. Maybe they'll actually take a moment and clean up their Origin shop. Not that it's the worst thing in the world, but it's not functional. It's not easy to use in the way that Steam is. It's not quite as good. And really, that's not where the money is. So I wouldn't worry about that at all, I guess.
But I think it'll be fine. As far as going through Origin, again, like you said, I don't have a problem with Origin. I have a problem with
I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it, but I have a problem with, you know, obviously SimCity comes to mind. Immediately now, when you mention EA and Origin, some of the first things that comes to mind is the whole situation with SimCity, and how Origin wasn't prepared for that, and how SimCity wasn't prepared for that. Rightfully so, they catch a lot of flack for that. I don't think we're going to see something like that, though, coming from what they're doing with Star Wars, or with the Star Wars titles. They've got their MMO. They'll have some form of multiplayer and that sort of thing with probably whatever DICE makes.
People are hoping for something as simple as another Battlefront.
Exactly. And I don't remember, but I didn't play it. Battlefield 3, did it have issues out of the gate as far as its connections, its multiplayer?
It had performance issues, and its connections were because they were using an unfortunately really arcane matching system.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the server browser?
Oh, that's right.
And everything that went with that. It wasn't particularly stable. It wasn't particularly good. It wasn't what you think of traditionally with connection problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the entire mechanism was unwieldy. And it was nothing like what people actually wanted. Historically, server browsers, they're very simple. It's only a handful of things they really need to do and be able to do correctly. And they couldn't do that. And they came up with some Rube Goldberg device to actually connect to a multiplayer game. And it made a lot of people angry because it was stupid and complex.
Yeah.
It could have been much simpler and much more straightforward. But again,
why are you keeping me from playing my game?
Right. Why are there so many steps between me and the people online who I want to play with? It doesn't make any sense. But that's, again, neither here nor there.
Yeah.
My guess would be that EA has free rein to... EA is fully allowed to just say this will only be on Origin for the PC. It'll only be through our distribution service on the PC. Disney has not shied away from that. I point you back to a decision they made at the end of last year where they finalized a deal with Netflix, and Netflix is now the sole online distributor, digital distributor of Disney properties for movies and TV shows and stuff like that. That's why you started seeing all sorts of Disney stuff pop up on
ABC.
The Netflix.
And all the Marvel movies as well.
And then the ABC stuff. Disney was like, no, you do it. We don't want to do that. Right? Why do we want to do that? It's just another thing we would have to deal with. We want to be a content creator. You're a distributor. So, like, let's make a deal. And now they are. They have no problem in letting someone else who already has the expertise and the infrastructure taking care of it. And I don't think they're going to muck around too much in EA's business about how they distribute and how they develop, so long as they're not causing any problems. I think it's probably that simple. I think there's oversight for sure, but
oh yeah, absolutely.
But I don't think they're going to be mucking around in the fine details of it. They don't want to. Otherwise, Disney would have gone out and bought something like their own EA. They would spend more billions buying a game company. But why do they want to do that when there's already a game company
And they'll be consistent with what they've already done, because they license out their characters, Epic Mickey, Kingdom Hearts, things like that.
I think it's very clear that you're still going to suffer a lot of the things that you believe you suffer as a customer of EA's, unless you're one of those people who simply won't do business with them because of something like The Sims. You won't do business with them at all. I think that's a little bit far, and I think it's certainly ineffective, but I can understand it. I think there will be fewer of those people now that they control the Star Wars stuff. And again, entirely because of nostalgia. Star Wars games aren't even necessarily very good. It's very hard to tell whether they're any good, whether they have been any good. I mean, it's one thing to look at what EA's doing, right? They've got all the Star Wars stuff, and Star Wars has been around for a while now, you know? Whatever your age, you've got some relationship to it, and it's going to be different person to person, generation to generation. And a lot of us who were not young in the 90s, but we were, you know, becoming our own people, right? It's somewhere in our 20s. I'm a little older than the rest of you, Matt and I are the same age.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when you were like your own person, spending your own money on your own games, building your own computer, and setting up your own rickety Frankenstein LAN party, you know, in the den so that you could play X-Wing versus TIE Fighter together, right? Were those objectively good games? I honestly don't know. Like,
how do you divorce the nostalgia from
the
reality?
You really, really can't. When you're playing TIE Fighter, right? Old, ancient game. When you're playing TIE Fighter, you're playing, like, I'm sitting there in that TIE Fighter and it looks like the TIE Fighter from the movie. It sounds just like it, you know?
You hear the music score, the laser blast.
The laser blast sound exactly like they do. And it's fun, sure, but how much of it is because when I was 8 years old,
that's what you wanted
to do. I used to watch the VHS tape over and over and over and over and over again. Because there was a point in time when that's all Star Wars was.
Mm-hmm.
Was three VHS tapes
or
on the
Betamax
shelf for me.
We owned them on beta.
God, you are weird. Right? Or like so there was much. Everybody knew laser the guy disc. With the laser. Disc.
Oh yeah. Man. Everybody that was like the
no one
the
was
arc
that guy.
Of the Covenant back yeah. then.
Nobody actually was that guy, but everybody knew that guy. So when you talk
we
about
still what, know that guy.
Yeah, yeah. when you're talking about what you expect them to do, I also think I would like to point out that we're moving into the third act of what Star Wars actually is. The first act didn't end until the late 90s.
99?
Yeah. It wasn't until the new films came out. Every game, every book, every expanded universe, everything was
all
based
original series.
On the original series. And all of the efforts that different people put in to kind of spackling over the cracks. You know? There were three films. There were gaps between them. There were
the two Ewok movies.
You know, that's part of the spackle, in my opinion. But that's exactly my point. Everything
countless books.
From everything from the old Atari Empire Strikes Back game I had, which is one of the greatest video games ever made.
Yes, absolutely.
Where you just like flew this way and shot AT-ATs. Like it was brilliant, right? So everything from that moment up until the mid to late 90s, Shadows of the Empire, Dash
again,
Randall.
Flying around Hoth, shooting
right.
AT-ATs.
But I mean, doing all of that stuff, that was more spackle that took place between the second and third films. It was more of a way to fill all of that in. And that was right there at the end of the first act of what Star Wars meant. And then this new business happened. Then episodes 1, 2, and 3 happened. And the way games were made,
everything sort of shifted towards
changed,
the prequel.
And everything became about the prequels.
Clone
and
Wars,
the old stuff
everything.
Sort of fell by the wayside and disappeared and nobody cared anymore. And we found ourselves in a place that we didn't enjoy. Because the thing we loved, the good games, because we thought they were good games, didn't exist anymore.
I think after the prequel started, was it just Jedi Outcast and Academy, those were the only things really in the original timeline?
Yeah. And that was it petering out really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. But again, our nostalgia was snuffed out. The thing we had always been nostalgic about didn't exist anymore. Or it was just so far in the past and nobody cared about it. And we spent all of the time from 1999 until now living in the second act of what Star Wars is.
Which, in a three-act play, the second act is always the darkest.
It's always the most full of turmoil, sure. It's just not a very good second act. But now we're moving into a third. Now someone else owns it entirely. The simple fact that Lucas won't even be directing the films was all that was ever required in the minds of a lot of people. But the actual script writing, not him anymore. The direction is not him. The oversight is not him. The decision about what to do with the games doesn't belong to LucasArts. Everything is being handled by a different group of people. Whether you think it's going to be great, or you think it's going to be a disaster, or you don't care because it's just stupid games and stupid movies, doesn't matter. It's big business, it's entertainment, and it's about to be something it hasn't been before. So, at the very least, I think what we should be doing, all of us ancient, snarky, angry grognards, should be heralding this
change.
As the death of a period of Star Wars that we could not stand. This is the death of the second act and the birth of the third, whatever it's going to turn out to be.
Could be something just as good. Could
Be 10 times worse.
Yes.
Who knows?
And that's the fun of it. But yeah. Anyway, that's going to wrap up the first hour of Endgame Chat. We'll be right back with the second hour. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Going to jump to a story that was brought to our attention. Actually, I kind of knew about it, but it was requested that we talk about it from Joshua. Gersnort posted to our Facebook page and said, you guys need to talk about this on the show this week. This whole situation just went from uncomfortable to just plain gross. He linked us to a story on Polygon. Silicon Knights unloads property, closes offices, and continues battle with Epic Games. Silicon Knights is a developer from, God, a long time ago. I mean,
yes.
They've
going back to Legacy of Kain, I believe, the first one I know of.
Yeah, it goes way back. And that, what year is that?
How far back did they do Blood Omen?
Blood Omen.
They did the actual Blood first Omen. Blood Omen. Well, that
they
would
did
be...
the original Blood Omen, then Crystal Dynamics, took over for Soul Reaver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then...
Well, they took over that whole series afterwards, the whole Legacy of Kain series.
So if they Blood Omen was 97?
That was 96.
96.
Original PlayStation.
So,
great game.
Been around for a while.
Great game, loading times.
Were not great.
No, not so much.
They haven't necessarily been, you know, at the front of gamers' minds so much.
After that, they moved to the GameCube, essentially.
It was a long period of silence. Yeah. But then they moved to the GameCube for
Solid.
They did Metal Gear Solid remake,
which was actually really good. Twin Snakes, I enjoyed.
That was GameCube.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So was Eternal Darkness.
Yes.
Was also a GameCube title, and then of course Too Human, which would ultimately be their downfall. Too Human released for the 360, a 360 exclusive at that, I believe.
Right. Although it was originally planned for the previous generation of consoles.
It was. But development time and everything else, and who knows really exactly what all accounted for that, because basically it was Too Human that set off the situation that they are currently in now, involved with Epic Games.
They were using the, at the time, very new...
Unreal Engine 3.
UE3, the Unreal Engine 3. And speaking anecdotally... because it's been very, very hard to find a lot of real fact about what was happening at the time. There was what appeared to be consensus in the industry that the Unreal Engine 3 was extremely hard to work with. Like a lot of things out there, for anybody who doesn't actually know, one of the most important things about being able to get a game made is being able to license, to lease and purchase someone else's game engine, the technology used to make a game. And because making your own technology, building a game from the ground up, is extraordinarily time-consuming, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Man hours, work hours, lots of money. So one of the great things has always been that there are companies like Epic who make their own technology and then license it to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And
you could argue that like the original Unreal games and the ones that Epic make were just billboards and commercials for their engine.
Right. As a way because people the games see. Themselves were really kind of limp, kind of shallow, not extraordinarily wonderful. And a lot
it's
of the
it's a tech
other
demo
things,
that you yeah. can play.
And so we're talking about things like the Source engine, like the Quake engine, all of these different things. You just build off of it. You learn more about it. You can develop your own way to work with it and make it produce the kind of games you want. You can add plugins. You can add other technology to it that enhances it. But you didn't have to actually develop your own technology.
Mm-hmm.
You pay, you know, at the time, a very long time ago, $250,000, $500,000, something like this. And you get the rights, you get access to all of the original code, you get access to all of the documentation, and you get direct access to the team of people who made it and help support it. You know, you get someone on the other end of the phone who can always help you through what you're doing. It's a full package that's much cheaper and much faster than doing it yourself. But there were arguments early on in the lifespan of the Unreal Engine 3 that it was really sticky and weird to work with, that the tool set was didn't function as it should, that all of the support really wasn't there, that Epic wasn't doing what
the documentation didn't really
the documentation was bad, and that the game just couldn't be wrangled very easily to produce a game
that looked good.
It had a lot of graphical problems, it had a lot of performance problems, and this is something that Dennis Dyack at Silicon Knights, you know, got. This became the core of his arguments about what the problems were with Too Human, why it had taken so long to make it, and the problems he was having. And there were apparently other people. He wasn't the only one. A lot of people decided
Unreal was kind of sabotaging it for third parties.
Right, and that was the claim. And that Epic had no problems. They're like, what? We have no problems working with this. Look at our game, you know? And
it looks amazing.
They released Gears of War, and it looked fine. But everyone else wasn't really doing as good a work with it. And it was a long time before, reportedly, it became an easier piece of technology to work with. And a lot of people seem to think this, or were led to believe they did, but none of them went so far as to actually say this publicly or officially, and certainly didn't go so far as to try to sue Epic over it. Probably because they knew what would happen.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what happened to Silicon Knights.
Right. They sued Epic. They sued Epic over it, stating that that Epic had failed to provide Silicon Knights with a working game engine while also sabotaging efforts by Silicon Knights and others to develop their own video games. Epic countersued and won $4.45 million.
Yeah.
And what was their countersue about?
I guess they countersued in the sense that
they're countersuing the same that Silicon Knights were using their engine without paying royalties.
Right, right. But they won that.
Yeah, which is
and
hard.
That's still ongoing.
Yeah.
Silicon Knights has not paid that back. Silicon Knights, as we understand it, has not also filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, they haven't filed for bankruptcy yet, so they still exist as a company.
They do.
As a name.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Because
they have staff, according to the most recent statements.
Yeah, but as we understand it, there is no building that houses them anymore.
Their phone numbers have been disconnected.
Yeah.
They have no equipment. No, nothing.
They've been selling off computers that you know, that sort of that had assets. Although, as we understand, those computers were wiped after they sold them. So when they sold them, so that is to say
that none of that everything surrounding Too Human is gone.
Yeah.
As part of the punishment or part of the outcome of that lawsuit, that's gone. They were forced to delete everything that they had worked with and everything that they had created using those tools. So my understanding is that that's.
It's dead.
It's gone. It doesn't exist. If you've got a crappy copy of Too Human out there anywhere, hold on to it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you can find a copy. I tell you what, while we're talking about
curiosity.
This, somebody hit up eBay and see if you can find what Too Human's going for. Or X-Men Destiny, actually, because that
was
another one.
That was
one.
The other one that was on Unreal Engine.
Neither one were very good, though.
They weren't.
They're just curiosities.
They weren't. They were curiosities.
There was a lot of promise in Too Human, I should say.
Oh, there was a great promise in Too
and
Human.
And I would even argue that at the time it came out, and this is, you know, several years ago now, it was a you could make a case that there was an interesting game there. Mm-hmm. Not a well-made game.
Yeah.
And not a game that performed very well, but an interesting game. And sometimes that's enough to make it worth a look. But they had hardships, and it wound up going for, I mean, sealed brand new copies at retail you could find for dollars.
Mm-hmm. X-Men on eBay is going for about 10.
And I'm seeing the highest for Two Human as far as buy nows is 25.
Well, it's actually more than...
But I mean, most of them are like down in like $3, $5.
Yeah. No, it won't turn into anything anytime soon. It'll be the kind of thing that'll be interesting to hold on to 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Simply because, as I say, for curiosity, because it doesn't exist in some vault.
It holds
somewhere.
A landmark in a timeline.
Yeah.
You know, of like, here's where it all went south.
Yeah.
You know? And this doesn't exist anymore in any kind of way. You will not have this as a digital distribution type of title.
No.
It's done.
GOG will never pick it up.
Exactly.
Or any version of good old games that have, that somehow in the future manages to handle old console games.
And it's really
games.
Fascinating That'll to think happen. About that that aspect.
Yeah, you'll
because
never
GOG's
get...
GOG's bringing back all these old System Shock 2, all these old titles.
Right. Well, even on distribution platforms like on Microsoft's little digital... other arcade games and stuff like that.
They're you on get demand section.
You get HD versions of older games from time to time. But there is simply no hope that someone will swoop down out of somewhere, pick the game up out of, you know, out
some
of the trash,
of obscurity and
put it back together, fix it, release it in some great way. The community will never do it. No one will ever do that. It is gone. And it's sad when things are gone. I actually don't like that. The archivist in me really, really can't stand that. So
I really want to stress, because the amount of time that we have to cover this is probably not going to be enough sufficiently to kind of get this point across. But I would recommend anyone head over to Polygon and find the story on Silicon Knights and read it, because we're going to be quoting a lot from them. But anyway, in 2000, so now you know the backstory. In 2010, Silicon Knights received a $4 million loan backed by Ontario, they're Canadian-based. Money from that loan was intended to be put towards development of a new AAA video game that will appeal to a mass gaming market and create more than 65 new jobs, and the loan was expected to be repaid sometime this year. Of course, that is not the case. Silicon Knights, like we said, as we understand it, they exist in name only, with very, very few people representing that company. And now... a lot of former employees of Silicon Knights,
yes,
including Dyack,
have
split off to form Precursor Games.
We've just learned now that they did that in the middle of last year.
Yes. And so they have, and they're working on a new AAA video game.
Yeah, which is going to be essentially a spiritual successor to Eternal Darkness,
which a lot of fans and a lot of people have been asking.
Yeah, a lot of people have been like,
"This was, if you're going to go for your first game and you're also going to get it crowdfunded, which is what they're trying to do,
go with something that will go that will get money."
This was the title you wanted to go with. You didn't want to go with Two Human 2, which we always wondered how they were going to do a sequel to that when it's got that in
that's
the title.
Simply not a problem now.
Two Human or something like that, but
way too human. Three humans.
But now they've got they're going off of Eternal Darkness, which is I played it on the GameCube, loved it.
I loved it.
It did some great stuff. I never finished it.
Oh yeah.
Oh really?
No, I never.
I got all three endings. That's one of the games that it really did mess with your mind. And every time I knew it was coming. I knew eventually I'm going to go crazy, and the game will do something. And I fell for it every single time.
And they're trying. I believe they're trying to reinstitute that gameplay mechanic in the new thing. But anyway, because that was a big draw.
Yeah, when you see the blue screen of death on your console, you're freaking out.
Yeah, there were a lot of neat little things that they did with that. So they're trying to get it crowdfunded now, and it's just a little given Silicon Knights history, given the people involved with Silicon Knights, things are just a little bit sketchy.
Well, yeah, it's like,
and shady with what's going on with what they're doing, because now Dyack is over there. Computers that belong to Silicon Knights are now over there. A lot of the employees are over there. It's as though Precursor Games is Silicon Knights, although they
vehemently without all the attached debt.
Yes.
And baggage.
They completely swear up and down that is not the case. We are a completely different company, even though we own all of this. Some of the assets are being argued were assets that were...
We're talking about software assets and art assets and the assets some of a game.
Yeah, some of these that Precursor now have were used from that $4 million loan, were used by Silicon Knights, and Epic Games is sort of laying rights to, no, that's still Silicon Knights. That's still their stuff. They still owe us money. That's ours, you know, essentially, is the way it's kind of coming down. It's unclear how much money Silicon Knights owes the Canadian government, because they really haven't talked about that. But it's very unsure as to what's going on. So they're going to make a game called Shadow of the Eternals. It's being crowdfunded. They cannot use Kickstarter because
they're Canadian.
They're Canadian. Right. Kickstarter only works with the U.S. and the U.K. So they've done their own sort of funding for this. They say we want to reach a 1.5.
I didn't realize that's why they were doing that.
Yeah.
Why doesn't Kickstarter work with Canada?
No idea.
That seems very strange to me, actually.
But Kickstarter does not.
I mean, it's hardly the first thing that we've learned. It's hardly the thousandth thing that we've learned will work in North America or United States, but not in Canada.
Yeah.
It just seems very, very strange to me.
But they're funding this. They're crowdfunding this themselves. You know, you go to their website and they have a goal of, I believe, $1.5 million,
somewhere around there.
For 5 episodes, it's an episodic game. They want to do episodic game with this, and you can choose to donate money. And there's a certain tier where you will get one episode. There's a certain tier where you will get all the episodes. The way Kickstarter works, you donate. They don't take the money until the end of the pledge drive.
Yeah, well, they don't give. I think they take the money, but they don't give it to the.
No, you don't get charged.
Yeah,
you're not charged.
Okay, you don't get charged.
Your card does not get charged until the funding is done.
Okay.
Until the drive is completed, and if they've reached the funding.
Okay. Yeah, I've only backed one thing that succeeded.
Yeah. If you, it's just virtually they kind of hold on to that, but you know it's not necessarily taken from you just yet.
So it's still just a pledge, but the pledge is kind of held in escrow
by
Kickstarter. Once they've reached the goal, say if the goal is $500,000, they pass that. Hooray, you actually do it. Okay, we're going to charge it and take all the money, and then we're going to give the money to the developer, to
correct.
The person who is.
Yeah, it all goes through. If they don't reach that goal, the money was, they never take the money.
Yeah.
You know, you never spend that money. That's how Kickstarter works.
Yeah, but now Precursor is doing something a little different that looks a little sketchy.
Precursor had to update their FAQ about this, their FAQ about this, because originally it said that your donations are made up front and they get to keep the money regardless. If the game doesn't get made, doesn't matter. We get to keep your money. I mean, I didn't say that in that sort of sense, but that's exactly what it was that we will not issue refunds if we are unable to meet our goal. They had to go and update that and say, okay, because they were catching a lot from that. Said, okay, we'll give you the money back if we don't make our goal.
Yes.
But they have there's no basis of that.
There's no oversight. There's no third party acting as escrow.
Again.
There's no one to appeal to
exactly.
If they don't behave correctly. They can point to fine print and say, nanny, nanny, boo, boo. Ah, it's our money. Get out of here, chumps. Or even if they're just not being evil, if somehow, you know, the hounds catch up to them, be it the Canadian government or Epic or anybody else who's, you know, seeking damages or repayment and somehow makes a compelling argument that Precursor really is a bit of Silicon Knights and because you have the assets, because it's the same people, maybe they didn't dot every I and cross every T in abandoning Silicon Knights and creating this new company, that they can go after them. If they can do that, they can come after your money. So it doesn't really matter what the pledge was for. There is no oversight. There's no protection for the people offering money. And you should always assume this, by the way. Even with Kickstarter, there's no guarantee that those guys are going to succeed when somebody does a Kickstarter for a game.
Mm-hmm.
If they meet the amount that they've requested for the drive, you know, if they meet their goal, whatever it is, that's certainly great and the money goes through and they start their project, but that's no defense against market forces and job forces and acts of God or whatever else you want to call it. There is no guarantee 100% that you're going to get a game down the
road. It's also no guarantee of quality.
Well, we can go back to something like Colonial Marine and see, you know, investors invested in that.
Yeah.
You know,
yes. Sega largely investing in that, but the money being spent somewhere else. It's all dirty business filled with lies, unfortunately. And even the best intentions can result in something really, really horrible. So you should always just assume that once your money's taken out of your pocket, it's gone. It's just the safest thing. It's just to treat it like it's already gone. Don't expect that you're going to get the game that's going to make you whole as a person. The thing that's going to fill that empty, you know, part of your soul, and it's going to be the greatest thing in the world. Like, don't assume that. Just assume like, I want to see this. I'm hoping I will, but the money's gone. Pretend like you're gambling.
That's essentially what investing is, you know, just overall.
Yeah.
It's taking a gamble on something.
It's just that people generally have a really, really, people are really bad losers.
Yeah.
Where investments are concerned because, well, it's investment. I'm supposed to get something back. That's not actually what's happening. And like we say, there are certain protections that you have as a consumer in Kickstarter. And there's the antiseptic quality of daylight. Kickstarter is just kind of out there in the open. You're required to kind of expose yourself in a way that leaves you open to examination and to research, and people are going to dig down into what you're offering and hopefully come away with some really good idea about the likelihood of whether your thing is worth pitching in for. But when it's all managed internally, first party on your own thing, you're just begging for money.
The connection that I'm trying to make here is that in talking about Silicon Knights, remember, Silicon Knights, Precursor Games, supposedly two different things.
Yeah.
But when talking about Silicon Knights, they were given money from the Canadian government about two or three times. Millions and millions and millions. They were winning awards and winning money and all sorts of stuff. There was a lot of money coming into that studio. And look where it's gotten them.
Yeah.
They owe a lot of money to a lot of people. So now here's Precursor Games asking for money.
Yeah, where did the...
Whereas Precursor Games, again, they are separate from Silicon Knights, but they got a lot of people from Silicon Knights over there. It's really operating under that sort of thing.
Maybe they can't touch the Silicon Knights money at all.
Oh, they don't want to go anywhere near it. They don't want to really be in the same hemisphere as that business. And there will probably be questions about exactly how well they've done the job of separating the two. Maybe not as well as they think they have. That's to be determined by other people. Yeah. None of us can really know that. But regardless, if they abandoned ship and left the legal particulars in place where the debt was attached to a different company, left it, bought some assets on the cheap, moved to new offices, got a new name, started fresh, and then set right back to asking for money, yeah, there's a fish smell to it.
I don't know that you start fresh when you bring Dennis Dyack on.
Well, it's worth noting that he doesn't hold the same position that he held at Silicon Knights.
Right.
He was the president of Silicon Knights. Yeah. Now he is the chief creative director, which is where he belonged all the time. He needed to be in creative. He did not need to be running the front office.
Running business.
But it's also the sort of thing you would do when he has spent the last X number of years sounding foolish and looking foolish and sort of loudly arguing that it's someone else's fault that his game stinks. And that's a bit too simple a way to put it, but it's sort of what's been happening. And people just don't want to hear that. Nah, your game's terrible. I don't want to hear why you think it's terrible. It sounds like whining.
Yeah.
And he spent several years whining, for lack of a better term, even if he was maybe right and right to do so. So get him out of the leadership position. Put him in charge of creative. It's the best you can do. And it's also exactly what you would want to do.
Yeah.
If you're trying to make it look like you're not at all the same organization.
Get a little distance between the two companies.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a shame they can't use Kickstarter. I think there'd be a lot more confidence in them if they could.
Oh, yeah, or even something like Indiegogo or something like that.
And again, and I don't know, you know, Kickstarter is the big one of all of these. It's the one you look at as to the bar, you know, for how it should be done. And I have no idea about Indiegogo if they have any sort of other limitations about US, UK only type of stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe they can't do it. But anyway, it's out there. if you're a fan of it and you want to donate, just understand that they're not held to any sort of obligation. There's nothing on that website that is legally binding whatsoever.
Yeah, there's nothing saying you are definitely...
They're saying that if they don't make enough to reach their goal, they will refund your money, but there's nothing legally obligating them to do that. So keep that in mind if you decide to donate and if you want to see it made, that sort of thing. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I would love to have this. I'm saying personally, I'm not putting my money into it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. I hope it happens. There's a lot of Kickstarter projects that I'm the same way. I hope that happens. If it does...
I'll buy it then.
Exactly. And I look towards Tim Schafer's thing that I know Matt dumped his money in first chance he could.
Yep.
And I was just a little bit like, I'll wait and see on this and see, because I don't necessarily know that it's going to be something. They had the same situation. Double Fine had done Brutal Legend at the time that didn't get very good praise and good reviews type of stuff. It was sort of sketchy. It was like, well, I don't know what's going to happen with this. So it was kind of a wait and see. And they were the first ones to really do this whole kickoff Kickstarter, basically, and kind of bring them to the front. But now we know that Kickstarter is kind of good for things like this. Torment, of course, being one of them. And then there's a number of other projects.
Wasteland 2 I also backed.
Right, exactly. So there's a lot of things out there for this, and I wish they were running through Kickstarter, but they're not. And given their history and the way they've handled money...
It would just feel better if there was like an arbiter, essentially.
It really would. If there was a third... Yeah, some kind of middleman you had to go through rather than just giving directly to them to take your money and do it. And the money that they take doesn't actually have to go towards the game development at all.
Oh, yeah. You can just go towards whatever they want.
You know, and if they keep their money, who knows what happens to it. So keep that in mind. It's, again, if you want more details, head over to Polygon and read those stories. Head over to our Facebook page. There's a link there.
Yes.
From where Gersnorty posted it. So anyway, we'll come back with the last half of In-Game Chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat for the last half hour of the show or so. Going to hit, a couple of news stories here. Didn't warrant as much discussion, but they did come up. We'll start with, you know, layoffs and firings, actually. The interesting one is...
Weekly occurrences now.
They are. Now, I'll tell you what, before we get to the interesting one, we'll just go ahead and maybe lay out kind of the obvious one, TimeGate Studios.
Yeah.
Laying off its entire staff. TimeGate is the company... Behind
the company.
Yeah, really, it kind of goes in layers here, but they were the ones that worked on Aliens Colonial Marines.
A good chunk of it, correct?
Of which,
yeah, they're the ones subcontracted out to my Gearbox.
Of which, out of all of us, Matt is the only person that has played that game.
Yes.
And can really directly say that, you know what?
Good I feel choice, bad for them bad getting choice, fired, but at the same time, it was a terrible game.
It's never good to get
for
fired.
For anyone to lose their job.
Well, I thought we were in agreement that it was a terrible game because of management, because of the management of time and resources and how that stuff was misspent, mismanaged, misdirected, and kind of frankly lied about by Gearbox.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that entire story has been exposed. We've all just sort of decided it was
that's
a stinky game
down.
Anyway, and, you know, nobody likes Randy Pitchford anymore, so... Whatever. There's a new PlayStation coming out, so we're not going to talk about that. But I thought that was the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you say, the game stunk. Everybody at the subcontracting company should be fired. Because if it were a different set of circumstances, right, because we're also fickle, we'd feel very different about that. We'd be bawling our eyes out about, this is horrible. Good, hardworking people. And then someone somewhere would
just came in and
throw together an effort to make sure they all had jobs.
Right.
Except we didn't like their game. So... Right? I mean, that's kind of how we seem to be behaving. We're very fickle, and the wind is apparently blowing a completely different direction on this one. We can't decide who was the bad guy, but a bunch of people got fired.
I'd say almost everybody involved with that, not necessarily as a bad guy, but...
They're not coming out looking pretty.
That was just a bad situation for every single person involved.
I know, the entire staff, though. Every single time a story comes up about blah, 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 this thing goes bad, business is horrible in this way, yucky economy, stupid management, debts over here... You know, the leveraging of DLC over there, poor customer service in this third place, but the poor developer. right? And I'm not even saying they weren't. I'm not trying to be overly sarcastic. But in this case, it's like, well, the game's horrible. Whatever. Yeah, I mean, it was, but I'm sorry. I thought we were in agreement generally this was, and we as like a bunch of people who consume news, not that we've seen all the facts, but I thought the agreement was it was bad management, bad direction, mm-hmm. bad creative direction. I thought that's what it was. And in those cases, it sucks even more.
I mean,
all the staff gets laid off.
Yeah, fire an entire company just because of one bad game. How many bad games are there out there?
And I'm not even saying it's up for debate, right?
Yeah.
We know how even very good companies have to work between games. You are not simply on staff, right? There is only a need for you if a game is being made or if DLC is being made.
By
the time the game ships, that's it. I don't know if you guys have ever done it, and a lot of people haven't, but I've done contract work before. And you spend a certain amount of time over a period of the year or whatever on contract. You have a contract that runs from this date to this date. My profession works around contracts. And once it's done, whether the shows were good or bad, whether the season was up or down, whether we made money or lost it, whether you felt good or not, it doesn't matter. Your contract ran from here to here. Thank you very much. Your contract's at an end.
You might get renewed for something else.
Maybe. Maybe we got something else for you. Maybe we don't. Hey, we've got a summer gig coming up. We've got a couple of shows jobbing in. We could use some more people. We'll give you a small, we'll give you a short contract, or we'll cover the summer months for this thing. Or maybe we won't, and you go off somewhere else and do something else. It's a little bit like that for these guys. So if you're not making something, you're off contract. And that's when times are good. That's at high tide. These guys are suffering under low tide because the very last thing on their resume is going to be, I did this.
Yeah, did Colonial Marines.
Ooh. And it's bad enough,
Yeah, they're kind of they're like Bad Luck Studio, really. I mean,
right?
Yeah, because they had an issue with.
Well, I was going into that because not only did they just lay off their entire staff, they're now being sued for almost $7.5 million in damages from South Peak Entertainment over Section 8.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, again, it's all maybe one day all come out in the wash. Who knows if anybody will even care? But I thought we had all kind of agreed that when whole studios of just worker guys who make these things get laid off, because we know that the creative control wasn't theirs, it's not a whole studio full of black hats.
No.
Yeah. Right? So, I don't know. It's bad news, and it's just a continuation of a trend that we're seeing all over the place. And I'm not even saying it's wrong. It's just how the business is designed. Mm-hmm. Business didn't used to be designed that way. It used to have home studios. You used to have studios with familiar faces year over year over year. But turns out it's a business, and business just doesn't work that way, or it doesn't work that way anymore for these guys. So I don't know what it means, Whether this is, somebody who did something wrong is having it stuck to them, but a whole bunch of other people have got to find somewhere to go, And whatever talent may have existed in that group of people is done. Just done. They're going to scatter, Can't imagine the resources are there for them to pull together as an independent. Or maybe it is. I don't know.
And are you labeled with a stigma on your resume of having that as...
No, but yes.
Yeah.
I
know.
Depending on who you are.
That's true, yeah.
Some people can, walk away from that and still...
Well, because again, as we go through it, some people can look at that as like, I don't blame you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not for nothing, but it's like, the industry is made up of people who have been through things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't a lot of people out there untouched by scandal or...
Yeah, it's not the first bad game that's been out there that's been on somebody's resume.
So, the other people in the industry, I'm sure, are perfectly... understandable about that, but there's only so many jobs to go around.
Yeah,
so it's bad news. It's bad news. I hate to see stuff like this happen. I hate to see bad things.
Well, the other bad thing that happened that doesn't relate to necessarily an economic situation or
well, it sort of does.
I guess if you get down
the situation to it. Wouldn't exist if. Someone's economic performance wasn't horrible.
True. True, that is the case, but...
Well...
They didn't fire him. Again, okay, the story is that Patrice Desolets. Did I get that right? Correct? I have to
just
do that.
Own it, man, whether it's a mistake or not. Don't ask.
We'll get emails about it. We'll be told.
Anyway, he was fired, apparently, from Ubisoft. He's the guy basically behind Assassin's Creed, not necessarily the...
About the early parts.
Brotherhood,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, he left before Brotherhood was actually...
So, yeah, he quit first, then went to THQ.
Right. He was behind the whole story. He was behind it all. Didn't really like the way Ubisoft was handling everything about what he wanted to do. So he leaves the company. He has promised, and this is years ago now, promised just a Scrooge McDuck money bin of assets and resources to make whatever he wants to make at THQ. Your own studio, your own staff, your own project. Do whatever you want. We saw what you did over here. We want a big name. You're a guy. Here's all the money in the world. Here's a mountain of money. Go do something with it. And THQ does a very poor job of being a company who makes video games.
This is where the economic part falls in.
Right. And then they shatter, they fall apart, they crumble into bits and pieces, and the rest of the world starts picking them over and pulling them out. And we all thought it was very interesting that Ubisoft goes after a piece of what's left of THQ. Mm-hmm. Now, do we know anything about specifically what it was? Do we know any of what they got in particular? Or do we just know the vagaries? Because we never heard what it was Patrice was doing.
Yeah, all we knew is that they basically purchased whatever he was working on.
Right. So, and he came with it. And I thought that was very strange. I was like, why you go, like, what are you doing back over there? This wasn't like a... I don't know how much animosity there was, but you guys weren't like best buddies when you left. Like this,
right.
You left because you didn't like what they were doing. And you were wooed, you know, by some guys with some money. So, okay, but he winds up over there anyway, winds right back over there for a few months that it's been. And now we learn that he was fired, supposedly.
Escorted off the premises.
Yeah.
Which, according to him.
According to him. And... more interesting than that, that's hardly the first time that's happened.
Right.
He's fighting them on it.
He is. It's interesting that, yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily know that he's fighting on, like we said, we don't know. We don't know exactly what he's fighting on. It doesn't sound like he's fighting on them about, you know, I need the money, give me my money, let me keep my job.
No, he doesn't have that. What it seems like is he goes over to THQ. They do their deal. He says, I want to make this.
Two games, I believe, in development. Two games that he had ideas for.
Right.
Intellectual
so it's his stuff. There's no way that he didn't arrange full rights for whatever it was he was making.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure when he went over there, it was like, okay, I will make this, and you will like own distribution and publishing rights. But it's
still mine.
But it's my thing. I'm sure that was somewhere in that contract. Ubisoft picks it up. He comes with the bargain. And it sounds like somewhere in there they decided that, nope, we don't have to honor that. Or whatever it was that you were interested in, whatever it was that brought you here, we like what you made, we want your creative, we just don't want you.
And he said very specifically, I tend to fight Ubisoft vigorously for my rights, my team, and my game.
Right.
So
that's what it sounds like it is. It doesn't sound like he wants
to
be employed.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's some major disagreement over who actually owns whatever it is he was working on.
I have this idea that I came up with, and I'm willing to fight for it.
Right. I've got this contract with THQ, and you bought that contract as a part of the assets. This is us guessing, but that's what it seems like he's wanting to believe. And then Ubisoft is probably saying, nah, contract doesn't mean anything anymore because THQ doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, it sounds like exactly the sort of thing people go to court over in this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that seems to be what's happening. And then somebody else was fired as well. The producer, former Assassin's Creed producer and THQ Montreal producer.
Okay. Someone who came with him.
Mm-hmm.
Someone he was probably working.
Well, Patrice actually let that known. It's like, oh, by the way, this other guy was fired along with this situation. So...
I'm not going to automatically assume that UB is in the wrong here, because I really don't know. Like, I really, really don't know. And they're a giant company. They're not going to say anything. Patrice is one guy and got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
So it's easy to look at him and say that I certainly liked the first half of that series that you worked on. And you know, he didn't catch any of the stink from the later stages of Assassin's Creed, mm-hmm. even though he was largely responsible for some of the things I didn't like, but he had already left the premises, you know?
Yeah.
So he's sort of guiltless and blameless for any of the things that you may not have liked that happened later for that game series. It's easy to look at him and say, this guy only makes things I love, and Ubisoft are doing things to him I don't like, therefore, you know, simple algebraic formula determines that Ubisoft is literally Hitler.
The evil one. Yeah, I know. I get that. It just, like you said, it's the fact that he's fighting this back, you know.
Yeah, which means he probably just really wants to make sure that whatever he decided to start working on that was his, whatever idea was in his mind, stays his. And he'd like to take it somewhere where he can work on it. That's hopeless. That's not going to happen. But
right. The other piece of news that I found out this week was concerns Diablo 3.
This was a really sad news item for me.
Yeah.
Because when I read the headline, I thought, like, they've gotten rid of the auction house.
In a way, they have.
Yeah, but I thought they were just like, mea culpa, we're super sorry, we messed everything up.
Talk about the auction house.
I don't hate auction houses in general, right? And I didn't even really hate Diablo 3 up to a certain point, but...
Just kind of explain it for, you know...
Look, Diablo is very simple. You click around on the screen and you kill lots of very bad things. You use magic, you use swords, you use what have you, it doesn't matter. You pound your way through countless evil things, and it's really fun and satisfying in all the straightforward, clicky game kinds of ways, and you get loot, right? You openly admit that I am going to play a Skinner box, and you jump in there, and you click away on things that make satisfying sounds and look really pretty,
mm-hmm.
and they explode, and they drop, like, loot pinatas, you know? They blow up, and, like, candy and stuff comes out, and it's wonderful, and you put on the new shiny piece of gear, and it's super awesome, and it's great, and life is fun.
Right.
What they did in Diablo 3 was they changed the nature of the relationship between the player and that loot, between going through the game over and over and over again to get some slightly better object, which, if you don't find that fun, then don't worry about it. But for people who do, it actually is very fun, and for certain types of gamer, it was something they were able to do forever, just for 10, 12 years in Diablo 2. But what they did was they made your relationship to the loot much more random, deliberately obscure and random and impersonal. And what they wanted you doing was taking this ridiculous, bonkers, useless, off-the-wall loot and kind of like throwing it away or using it as crafting resources or something like that. And occasionally you'd have a really, really good piece of something that was legitimately good, only not for your class because, you know, whatever. So you take it to the auction house where you can buy what other people are selling that they found in their game. And yeah, that's not fun. Finding like a named sword, like, you know, like Joe's sword of something or whatever, it doesn't matter, like that awesome thing, you want to find it, you want to pick that up because that was the sword that the bad guy was using, or that was the thing that was lost by this guy that was, you know, stuck through the head of some zombie you just killed. Doesn't matter. Finding that stuff and getting it yourself is great. Going to the shop to buy it from some other doofus, it's not fun. It's not fun at all. But that's what the whole game became about, going to the auction house to buy that gear. And they wanted you doing it that way because the auction house had a real money component. You could sell gear for actual real dollars. Real, like, earth money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of the really good stuff went. And that is not pure evil, but it certainly sucked all of the inherent joy out of what it meant to play a game like Diablo 3. So, at the end, I mean, I played it. Jeremy and I played it together for a long time. A few of us here played it. It was fun in the traditional kill monsters sort of sense, but in that...
Did you feel obligated to use the auction house?
Past a certain point, yes, because you simply could not find gear good enough to help you progress forward. Mm. It was too rare. So, with enough people playing, the rarity didn't matter. They would find something good, they would put it on the auction house, charge exorbitant sums for it, and then use that money to buy the gear they needed. And there was weird runaway inflation. Even if you decided you were never going to spend actual, you know, folding money on gear, you could spend it on gold and use that gold to buy some other stuff. It was, yeah, it was just a bit dirty, and everybody felt kind of dirty about it. We really just wanted, it wasn't the always online component. That really wasn't what did the game in and prevented the game from being a good successor to Diablo II. It was the auction house. So to see a headline that makes it look like, we're taking it all back, we're mm-hmm. fixing the whole thing and getting rid of the auction house, sort of charged me up for a moment.
Yeah, the first line is Blizzard takes Diablo III auction house offline. That's the first line. The
right?
Second line.
I moved to the edge of my seat when I read
that. The second line under that article. So if for whatever reason your display only has that, then you have to just move that. You have to scroll it up just a bit. That's the only thing you would see, because under that it says, after gold dupe bug creates economic chaos.
Yeah.
I don't know the specifics of the bug, other than...
It's hardly the first time we've seen something like this. Duplicating an item, or worse, duplicating the actual money.
But the economy of that game is based solely on how that auction house works. And anytime that happens, and that structure gets thrown completely out of whack.
And it already wasn't so much in whack, if we're honest.
Yeah, it wasn't the best. And so they had to close it down. This was on the 8th. As of sometime last night, a specific time, so it would be around 9 o'clock last night, it was back online and completely fixed.
It's very sad.
But they were running through a full audit of everything, trying to figure out...
who was duping gold and...
Oh, they'll find that. They have records for those sorts of things, and it's... They will track it down, but in the meantime, it does do damage to people who are playing the game the way it's actually meant to be played. Personally, I still think they ought to go back down into the roots and just tear it out. Take the game offline for a minute and just fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Make it exactly what it should have been, because I think they've admitted already that the whole thing was a mistake and they just can't figure out how to get out of it.
Right.
I was hoping this meant they had.
Yeah. But anyway, that is going to do it for this episode of In-Game Chat. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank everybody for putting up with the early recorded episodes that we've been doing for the past couple of weeks now. We are done with that for the foreseeable future, and we'll be back live next week in the studio. So make sure you check us out on Ustream. We'll have the cam going and the chat room going and everything else. That'll all be back up, and you'll be able to interact with us in the chat room and talk to us there and call us as well. We'll be able to do interviews again, so everything will be back to normal as of next week. So appreciate your patience with it. Hope you've enjoyed these shows, and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening.